them. But if Gia itself becomes a mice peasant, that's what I wanted to show. All right, now let's go. This is yours. The Rambam, I mean, Aleph, not Beis Aleph, the Yalkut Shemei. Yes. Now, so you have in Tkiah Shefer al Tealoche, the way we have analyzed it, we have, please, in Tkiah Shefer al Tealoche, we have two mutually exclusive, I mean, prima facie mutually exclusive motifs. The motif of Tzoko, the Tzoko and Shira, I mean, they're mutually exclusive, most, I mean, at first glance, they are not, it's like there is an inner contradiction within Schaefer. On one hand, Schaefer is the instrument of Tzoko. I want you to know, I mean, those that attend my Shul and Maria know that, I mean, there's a difference between Tfilo and Tzoko. Tzoko, Tfilo is always, I mean, the word is palel, means to think, I mean, to judge, you know, some befillin, I mean, to judge. It means tefillah is based upon the premise that man is a great being. He has an intellect with which God endowed him, which was not awarded to other creatures, and is capable to judge and to analyze and to discriminate and to think and to arrive at decisions. He enjoys the freedom, I mean, to decide if pay favor of when he is faced by few alternatives, in favor of one, and so forth and so on. This is tefillah. Tefillah is a result of chashivus adam, that a man of dignity of man. Man, Kadosh Baruch Hu has endowed him with dignity. He's a dignified being. As a dignified being, Kadosh Baruch Hu has conferred upon him the privilege of being able to confront him, to be able to confront his maker, his creator, anytime he wants. He needs no appointments, he needs no dates, no rendezvous with Kadosh Baruch Hu. Whenever a man is ready, I mean, to knock on the door, on the gates of heaven, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will answer. This is Alochim Shumei HaTfilah. But Tfilah is an expression, or is symbolic of human dignity, human singularity. Human singularity. This is Tfilah. And that's why in Tfilah, with regard to Tfilah, Chazal required a certain posture. Can I just say? Not any posture is good for tefillah, you know very well, you need amideh. According to many Rishonim, amideh is indispensable for tefillah. The Ramshita happens to be that amideh is necessary, but b'diavad, the exposed factor, he doesn't have to repeat his prayers. If he said them, while sitting or lying, yes. But many Rishonim say that amideh is marked. Why is amideh marked? Why is it necessary to be amid? It's called tefillah amideh, because amideh is very characteristic of man, physically. The straight posture is one of the specific characteristics of man. Man walks straight, while the beast doesn't walk straight. You know the story of Chabad, what the Rav one says. What's the difference between a man and an animal? A man who walks straight. So if he wants to see the heaven, all he has to do is to lift his head, and he'll see the heaven, the heavens. An animal can never see the heavens. Animal knows there is only dirt, that's all. Earth. Animal can never see heaven. But anyway, this is the straight posture is characteristic of singularity and uniqueness of man. And that's why tefillah, man appears before HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the chosen creature, as the chosen one, as the one who was singled out by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the crown of creation. And then the halacha is that you have to be dressed up for tefillah. The Gemara tells us many that the first Rabbi Shimon Yochai Rabbi Lezer, when they were hidden in the Ma'are, when they were in hiding in the cave, so they used to take off their clothes and sit in sand, up to their neck, and study Torah. But whenever this man tefillah arrived, they used to get out of the sand, of the pile of sand, and they used to dress up for tefillah. Tefillah requires chituch hadibur, good pronunciation, wonderful diction. In tefillah, in Shem Nesre, each word is important, each word is significant. This is all speech, clear speech, understandable speech, the gift of communication. Is also characteristic in singular of man. So you see, all the halachas, the Rambam's four halachas formally, which is me'akev in tefillah, and about 10 which are not me'akev in Rambam. All halachas, tefillah requires kavone, because man possesses the capacity of concentration, of thinking, of judging, of knowing his own needs, and knowing how to respond to his needs. So tefillah is always what's intertwined or interwoven into the texture of human dignity, the human rationality, and into the texture of men being different from different and singular in the universe. This is tefillah. So okay, something else. Soke means, after all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to the cry and to the howl of the animal as well. Not only to the shout of man, but to the howl of the animal there. Kula melecho yisabero. Peseach es yodecho mazbir lechol chayim atzei. It means, according to our opinion, every creature prays. But this is not a rational prayer, it's an instinctual prayer. It is kula melecho yisabeo, instinctually, spontaneously. It's not premeditated, it's not intentional. We cannot speak of an intentional act on the part of an animal. Yes. The animal can shout, cry out, howl. But the animal cannot pray, cannot doubt. You cannot say the animal is a mispaleles, the higher is power. Tseyakim, clothing tseyakim. The dog howls, barks. It has pain, it will begin to howl. It will emit sounds as a reaction to pain. This is also a prayer. It is taken as a prayer, and it's considered by HaKadosh Baruch as a prayer. And it's admitted to HaKadosh Baruch, and HaKadosh Baruch hearkens to the prayer of the animal. So there is many times that men darkness prays not like a dignified being, but like an animal who actually will like man. Sometimes man escapes of losing everything, of losing his dignity, his singularity, his uniqueness, his rationality. You know that, mother man is capable of that, of losing everything, every single attribute which God has bestowed upon him. And then suddenly he realizes he lost everything and he's in crisis, in distress. He forgot how to speak already. As we say it in Hebrew, we have lost our intelligence. We don't know how to formulate even our own needs. Then the tefillah is converted. This tefillah has no license to pray. He cannot meet the very requirements of prayer. No intelligence is defiled. He's abominable. He's repulsive. His physical appearance is repulsive. Offensive to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then he begins to pray. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not deny the possibility of return, but he starts out not with tefillah, but with tzoko. And I believe Rabbi Yitzchak Baditschiner says it in Dush HaSlev, if I'm not mistaken. I saw it a long time ago. The Gemara tells us in Broches, whenever Rabbi Chanina ben Deisi had to pray, to intercede with HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Achille, he used to meniach reishit ben Birko, he used to put his head between his thighs, his thighs. What kind of a tefillah posture is that? Oh, you're mispalling. So Rabbi Yitzchak Baditschiner says, he used to say, I come before thee, not as a human being, but just as a being. And this is the posture of the animal. This is the posture. Head down is the posture of the animal. The posture of man is head up. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu may reject dignified man. Because dignified man is a responsible man. And if a man is responsible, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has many claims on him. And not every time we are come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are capable of him to satisfy his demands. So the tefillah is rejected. But when man comes as an animal, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no claims on him. And then the tefillah is accepted. Interesting, and that is the Rambam, very interesting. In Minchas Tefillah Bechol Yom, Mitzvah Seser Yispalel, and he calls it Avedo Shebelev. You know that the Rambam, actually, the expression, we come across this expression in the Gemara, in the Medrash, in particular in Medrash, that who has, what shall I say, rehabilitated the Avedo Shebelev, and it was a peripheral expression, and pushed it from the periphery, moved it from the periphery to the center of the Rambam, Tfilas Avedo Shebelev. Yes. Always, with regard to Tainis, Mitzvah Sasei, Litzeik, Uloria Lifnei Adeshev. Never least, rather than Tainis, interesting. Because Tainis is a different mitzvah. So it's okay. And that's why Sliches. Sliches, we are now before the period of Sliches, the commencement of Sliches. This is the basic difference between Sliches and what we call Davnen. What we call Davnen, prayer, is Tefillah. It's based upon human dignity. It's a result of human singularity, of human choiceness, actually. Upon the fact that man is very close to God. This is Tefillah. Particularly it comes to expression in Malchus, why Sliches, Leibim Masim Bonu Lefenecho, Kedalim Veroshim Dabchat Knut Lasecho. Already the introduction of Sliches is, it is Soke, Sliches is Soke, not Tefillah. Because this is the mitzvah of prayer when one is in distress or in crisis, when his very existence is threatened. So then it is Soke. His interesting is, the Ramban says that Shefer is not just Tefillah. He says, Soko, this is the lowest, what shall I say, level of, or the lowest degree of human contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Man acts like an animal, and any creature can appear before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And on the other hand, Shefer is Shire. Shire, when man sings a hymn to God, when man, is mesmerized by the drama, the cosmic drama, and he begins to sing Shire HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then man appears, emerges in a different role, not as being a low creature, but as being the choicest of all creatures. Shire. The Shefer has both. Shefer has Shire, by which man rises to dizzying heights. And Shefer has the element of Tzoke, by which man actually is somehow joins the beast and the brute in the field. It's very strange. The reason, we'll see later on, the reason why it is so in Shefer is very obvious and very plain. The reason is that Rosh Hashanah itself contains two ideas which are contradictory, which are antithetic. The dialectic of Schaeffer, this antithetic character of Schaeffer, is just a reflection of the dialectic of the Kedushas Hayom of Rosh Hashanah. That the Kedushas Hayom of Rosh Hashanah has an inner contradiction, an inner antithesis, an inner antinomy, it is ambivalent, is already was known to the Chinuch. I haven't come across, I mean, you'll find it later in Kuditer, but I mean among the Rishinim, like I haven't found it like in anyone, but in Chinuch. When the Chinuch speaks about Rosh Hashanah, but the Kedushas Hayom, he says as follows. Chinuch, I believe it's Parsha Meir, Mitzvah Shin Yud Alef. I believe so, just a moment. Because the Chinuch speaks about Rosh Hashanah in two Parshas, in a Meir and a Pirchas. So let me just check where did the Pirchas, where did the Chinuch... ומשור של מצווה סמיד הזה שאויו, he says like that, the fact that Rosh Hashanah is a Yom Adin itself, the fact that Rosh Hashanah is a Yom Adin, man, this itself is a tribute to man. Because Yom Adin, what does it show, the fact? What does it show? That it means that man is subject to judgment. Who is subject to judgment? Responsible person. I mean, a cotton has no responsibility, not subject to judgment. And the fact that man is subject to judgment, whenever Hashem he faces his creator, I mean, and he has to account for his existence, so to say, explain his deeds, that shows that man is the choices of all beings. He is actually dignified, singular, and unique. That there is something divine in man. That's exactly what makes Rosh Hashanah a Yom Tov, he says. Nimtzo shehayim hanirbad hazeh hu kiyumei shel olam. That Rosh Hashanah is actually, I mean, basic to the existence of man. Because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu had told man, I'm not going to judge thee. So it means it would mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had denied man the great attribute of responsibility. So then man would lose his uniqueness, his very crown that HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed upon him. On the other hand, his Yom Tov itself is Rosh Hashanah Hayim Simcha, a day of joy, a day of ecstasy, a day of pride. Man may take pride in himself, that he is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready to confront him, act as judge, sitting in judgment upon man. This itself is the greatest privilege, you see. It's worthwhile to declare the Yom Tov, and to be included among the joyous, dear, precious holidays of the year. But on the other hand, man is frightened Rosh Hashanah. Why is man frightened Rosh Hashanah? Mi yizdak lefanech obadin. In the matzah imekadim, mi yizdak lefanech obadin. If you press justice down to its bottom, who will be found faultless in thy eyes? Hence, it's a yim kachad as well. Umitzat shuyim adin lodun kol chai, Roy Ula Ahmed Bey, Biyiro Befachat. It's actually this ambivalence in Yom Tov Rosh Hashanah was known to the Chinuch. But not only to the Chinuch, the Halacha reflects it. The Halacha reflects it. On the one hand, the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah, Shalom Malachi Ashores, Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lomo in Yisroel, Enlim, Halol Rosh Hashanah, Omolem, Sifre Chaim, Sifre Mesim, Psuchim, Otvonai, V'Yisroel, Enlim, Shira, this is an impossibility. In other words, the Rambam has quoted the Gemara in Hilchos Chanukah, but he added a few words the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah says, instead of Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Meisim, the Rambam uses a different phrase. Avol Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim, Perigim u'Hilchos Chanukah, Allah Chavod, Avol Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim, Ein Bem Hallel, ולפי שאין ימי תשובו ויירו ופחד, לא ימי שמחו יסירו. The element of fear prevails on Rosh Hashanah. But the Ram don't say le yemei simcha, he never said it. Le yemei simcha yisera. It's not a day of excessive joy. So what does it mean, in other words? There is joy, but the joy is tempered, and the joy is limited by what? By another experience, the one of fear, and the one of fear. That's what the Rambam said. On the other hand, do you know that Rosh Hashanah is regard to Avedis, suspends Avedis, like Pesach, Shuas, and Sukkot? Suspends Avedis, suspends Shiva, suspends Shleishim, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim remove both Shiva and Shleishim. What factor does remove Avedis and Yom Tov? Simcha, Amar Rove. Over the Neg, Amar Lusa, Amar Erush, and Amar Neg. Os Esa, the Rabban, Vissamachtum, Chagecha, Vedoch, Esa, the Yochid, Amen. On the other hand, Rosh Hashanah is a yim pachad. It's a yim pachad. This is exactly both experiences come to expression, manifest that by the Shefer. So Shefer is both. It's a yim tzoko. Da'akon d'Ramban, it is v'chisov v'mukhom v'altzachem. The man should look upon himself, Rosh Hashanah, if he had been trapped with all escape avenues sealed off, and there is Soko, Akin Soko. And the other end, Rosh Hashanah is the Yim Simchas Ramadech, and Rosh Hashanah is Kaita Matzah. Both Psukim, which represent two opposites, are applicable to Rosh Hashanah. Chisom Ucham Atzal Matzaras, Atzir Eschem, and also the Yim Simchas Ramadech, and Rosh Hashanah. Now let us open the Marzah. Yes, Yom Rosh Hashanah, I'll tell you. Yeah, never, yeah. Always the Gemara always says Yom Rosh Hashanah. Because Rosh Hashanah, there is Rosh Hashanah in the 15th of Shvat, to distinguish that Rosh Hashanah from others, between that Rosh Hashanah and other Rosh Hashanahs, is Yom Tov, is added to Rosh Hashanah, because no other Rosh Hashanah is Yom Tov. Alright, let us, you have the Marzah, alright. Where is the my Marzah? As a matter of fact, let me ask you, I ask you to look through, just let us start. I mean, I won't simply follow the lines, you know. This is the Musaf, the first piety Musaf. Upat Mos L'Shefet Ayim. Ufat me'oz l'shefet ayim. What does it mean, ufat me'oz l'shefet ayim? What does it mean? Let me simply translate the word. Ordained, prepared, designated. Yeah. Why is it so? Interesting is that Goldschmidt also explains it this way. He quotes a pasuk. He quotes the translation. I mean the interpretation by Tari Munkanas. And he doesn't. He didn't understand the translation. Where is Upat? For instance, Upat means the day was Upat Miros L'Shefet Hayim. What it means, in other words, Hayim is the subject, correct? Hayim is the subject of the sentence. The verb is Upat, correct? Yes. And then Miros is the adverbial designation of time, correct? And then is the shepherd is the purpose for what? For what? It means upat, this day was ordained. When ordained me was at the creation of the world. Yeah, the earliest date. Le shepherd, I mean for Mishpat, correct? That's what all all of them. Matalevi translates like that, Goldschmidt. Now I check the English translation also. Ordained, designated, prepared. Oh, yeah. Basically, the word upat is not to ordain or to prepare or to designate. It isn't upat. Now let's take the psukim for upat. Vofadeto lei becheshef leifeit. Gerd, of course. Gerd. What does it mean, Gerd? I mean, I know what Gerd is. Yes. Yeah, to put on a belt and to fasten the belt, to fasten it tightly. Yeah, you have the expression, the Rambam says, shinasti mosnoi, it's like a fadeti mosnoi. So in English we'll say, I girded my loins. Yeah, it means the final step. If a man, I mean, you prepare yourself for certain action. There are many steps in it, as far as preparedness is concerned. It takes time. When you do the final step, when you make the final step, when you are completely ready, I mean, you are dressed up already for action, then it's called upat. Already the Gemara says, for instance, the Gemara says, it's aloche also. Huh? Amirche is, what does it mean, for instance, you take the Hasidic custom, the practice, from having a belt around the girdle. What is it? He can Yisrael if they Hashem lekecho. I show to show readiness. Not at the time, to manifest readiness. To simply that I'm completely ready, completely. It means I'm dressed up for action. Basically means vafal to obey him. For instance, yeah, what's vafadeto mean? What it means? You get him with the effort, I mean, with the bend of the effort, I mean, alright. Skillfully with the bend of the effort. Yeah, as a matter of fact, now let us take a look, for instance, how the Pythonim used the term, the verb of ofeid. For instance, there is a piety malchies. In malchies, in the Akdome to malchies, this is not good. Where's my other mouse? Right. Excuse me, Father. Here it is. No. Just a minute. Yeah. In Malchus, in the Piyut of Malchus, we don't say it, Germany used to say it. I mean, for the second day, what's called the Shabbos usually. Halo Lekai, the Piyut Halo Lekai, or Shiro Uzei, Asapro Kvede. It is the Piyut preceding the Broche of Malchus, which is recited on the second day. The first day is on Sicho Malki. The second day is by Kalil. The second Halo Lekai is by Shimon HaGoro. Halo Lekai, or Shiro Uzei, Asapro kvede abdenu melucha. What does it mean abdenu melucha? What do you mean abdenu melucha? I'll clothe in majesty, with majesty. Clothing or dressing, I'll dress him or I'll wrap him in a sense wrapping or dress. Yeah, envelop, but it's in sense of dressing. Not after the Melucha, I'll prepare Melucha for him, makes no sense. I'll ordain him Melucha, no, Chas V'Sholem. After the Melucha, I'll clothe him in majesty. Eiteir Kasalmo. Ador also in sense of dressing. Eiteir Kasalmo, Neite Shomayim Kairio. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is enveloped in majesty. Or for instance, in Mekele Radin. Nepot Nekomo. What does it mean, Nepot Nekomo? But he's prepared for Nekomo. No. He's girded or he's dressed. He's enveloped in rightful vengeance. I mean, it's a very difficult sentence, Nepot Nekomo. Yeah, it's Levushe. Again, it refers to the dress. To the dress. To be enveloped, to be wrapped. Or for reasons, there is, I believe, in the first day, You have it also. There is another expression, Abdenu and Pahir, I lost it. But the Pythonim used Abdenu not in the sense of being ordained, being ready, but the sense of being girded, being enveloped, being wrapped, or being clothed. I mean, for me, it means when, in other words, what Abdenu means, when the clothes that I wear, what, betray my intentions, so to say. If I'll take a look at a person who is in battle dress, I'll certainly know that he's ready for war. Abdenu Melucha is not just ordained. Abdenu Melucha means when I take a look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how do I take a look? I mean, take a look at creation, at the universe, when I see majesty, majesty. So actually, the dress actually betrays or tells us the story of the person, of the person. Abdenu, Upat Hayim means that they can't say the Denu was ordained. Upat Hayim was mean? Vested is not enough, Vested. Huh? The Denu is girded or dressed for, like the judge who puts on, his robe, The judge is prepared, to sit in judgment even before he puts on his robe. Even when he's in his chamber, when he gets up in the morning, he knows that at 10 o'clock has to be in the court and judge, But you wouldn't say upat mishpat, the judge, as long as he hasn't put on his gown, which is symbolic of his profession or symbolic of the deed he's going to engage into. This is Abdenu. Listen. As a matter of fact, I want to tell you something. I have a doubt whether the whole translation is correct. And I'll tell you what I have in mind. According to their translation, Zupat Meoz Le Shefet Hayim, who is, what is the subject here? Hayom. Yeah. Hayim Upat Meoz Le Shefet. Now say it in English. Say it in English. To what? Ordained to judge? The thing doesn't judge. For judgment. The day he was ordained for judgment. I am afraid that there is a silent subject here. A silent subject. You know who the silent subject is? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Melech HaMelech HaMishpat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Upat Meoz LeShefet, and the Hayim is not the subject, the Hayim is just the adverbial designation of time. This day, Upat Meoz LeShefet Hayim. Because we speak of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a sense, Nepot Nekomo, Abdenu Melucha, Abdenu Kesa Melucha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to say, his girded means in his robes for judgment. On this day, this adverbial designation. And if you take the next sentence, chein masei kol yeim, nif chein masei kol yeim. Who? How can you say about the day hayim? If the Hayim is the subject, how can you say Upat Meoz LeShefet Hayim, and then Lifchein for the purpose Lifchein? So Upat Meoz HaKadosh Baruch Hu the Melech HaMishpat Upat Meoz LeShefet Hayim is Upat Meoz Lifchein Masei Kol Yeim. Why am I so? Just a minute. My field is not piyut, there well. Even though sometimes I understand better than the experts, they don't understand at all. by Torah. You see, they know the words, but they don't know the content. And if you don't know the content, you finally make mistakes, even with regard to the semantics of the words. You see, why am I so insistent that to change the expression of upad, the semantics of upad, from being ordained to being prepared, to being dressed up or being girded or being wrapped or enveloped, and why am I insisting so much that the subject here is a Kodesh Baruch, not the day? What do I gain by it? I gain something by it. Think twice before you answer. Before you answer, don't give an answer immediately. I mean, there's a problem. Why? I mean, you've got to guess what I have in mind. You see, I mean, and this is difficult sometimes. What difference does it make? What difference does it make? It makes a difference. What did Abelezer HaKalir, what did he want to explain, to show, to manifest? What did he want to express? What kind of an experience or what kind of emotions did he want to inspire in the Mispalel? Rupat Meoros. If you'll ask me before, so it is like Rav Lezer HaKalir, like the Gemara. I mean, you've got to see, to look through the piety of Rav Lezer HaKalir and Rosh Hashanah. What is the central motive of all this beauty? What is the central motive, the basic theme? The basic theme and this theme, basically there are two basic themes. And these two basic themes came to expression, to full expression, explicitly. I mean, in that pie, that's why I chose that pie, it was very characteristic. In terse terms, he actually formulates the whole philosophy of the Kedushas Hayeim. But if you read the pie of Rav Lezer HaKalir, I mean, you say the pie of Rosh Hashanah, I don't know, then America made a mitzvah to skip pie, you understand? What do you find in the pie? But you have only pie for Yom Rishon. For Yom Sheni, you don't have Rav Lezer HaKalir's pie. There are no pie for Rav Lezer HaKalir for Yom Sheni. All Yom Rishon, I mean, Rishon is Rav Lezer HaKalir's pie. He's living, actually. This is there. We have some inserts, I mean, by other Paitonim, but mainly it's Rav Lezer HaKalir. First day of Rosh Hashanah belongs to Rav Lezer HaKalir. If you start with Shachris, what does Rav Lezer HaKalir emphasize? Now take a look in the Shachris. So also Rav Lezer HaKalir. The Netilas Rishus by the Chazan. Yereisi Bifteisi Siach Lehashchem. Lehashchem. No. The whole period. If you read this period and you analyze it, and you want to, and you try to understand it, what conclusion do you arrive? You arrive at some conclusion. There is a central motif in the period, and that motif reoccurs time and again throughout. And of course, culmination is in a certain period, which was not written by Kalir, by the way. The culmination of that experience, which Rav Lezer HaKalir ushers in, actually, is to be found in a period which somehow, I mean, Hakul B'mazel Tov, Sefer Shmaya, who was written by a Paitan Ashkenazi, not by Rav Lezer HaKalir. But what is the main motif, the main theme? Dread. I don't say fear, dread. Dread. Not fear. Now let us see. Take a look at this poet. You know, they know their metric arrangements and the medieval poetry to have certain sounds, I mean, each word, each line has, for instance, the same identical sound. Not the whole word is the same, but the last part of the word is phonetically the same. Phonetic, the identity of phonetics, I mean. It's not rhyme the way we understand rhyme. It's not the rhyme we understand. I know. It's a different arrangement, the rhyme. It will say a different kind of. But the metric length, I mean, actually, the way they arrange, there is the identical sound, I mean. Sometimes it's a monosyllable, I mean. It's just one sound, which occurs in each, at the end of each line. What is the syllable? It's not even, it is a word also. Yeah, chil. Throughout the piyut is chil. Chil. And usually, that tells us the story of the piyut. this type of an arrangement, I mean, the last sound, you see, the last syllable, the first syllable betrays to us the whole story of the period. Always, you want to understand the period, take a look, and sometimes the Pythonian change the arrangement, the metric arrangement. For instance, you'll see in Upat Mos, Leshevet Hayim, his first is Yom, 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 Yom. The next is Tzor, Tzor, Tzor. The next is Rim, Rim, Rim. And then is Nim, Nim, Nim. And then is Cho, Cho, Cho. You see, it means there are many motifs. While in your Yoresi Bifteisi, there was only one motif. That's why he did not change the arrangement at all. It's the same syllable. Chil. What does chil mean? Ah. Well, why is chil kayaleido? Exactly, you mentioned. No, what? What? I caught you because you mentioned the word. You don't care to live with it. This a reward for suggesting. You quoted Chilka Yeledo, correct? So, what does it mean? Well, we have another expression. What is Chalchala Malkom Yoed? What is Chil? Ah? Chil. Chil means shaking, trembling. Trembling. It's a fear which expresses itself in a physical, trembling, in shaking. What does it mean? This is chil. Chil is very similar to dread. What's the difference between dread and fear? Of course, we run out of synonyms, so finally you have to use yiro too. The Ram uses yiro v'fachat. There is the difference between yiro v'fachat. Just a moment. Who defined the emotion of pachat, not yiro? The emotion of pachat, who defined it? Just a moment, who defined it? You talk, also. Who defined it? Just a minute. Don't be embarrassed if you don't know. Who? No, who defined it? Somebody defined, gave us a definition of what pachad is. Someone gave us a definition. Who is the one who defined it? Daughter. Who? You heard it before. Yeah, but there's no definition. The Torah in the Teichach, which we read last Shabbos. Give me a chumash. The Torah defined what pachad is. The finest and the best definition which no psychologist, no matter how modern, can change, add a word, or what shall I say, deduct a word, subtract a word. Let us see how the Torah has described pachad. מפחד לבופך אשר תפחות וממרא עינך אשר תראה. Beautiful description. Couldn't be any better. Beautiful description. What is the synopsis, the digest of it? What is pachad? Pachad means non-rational. There are two kinds of fear. Some fears are rational fears. This is basically yiro. No, some fears, he says irrational, all a little bit milder. It's non-rational. There is no rationality to the fear. Sometimes it's irrational. It's absurd. Fear, which is endowed with rationality, is yiro, usually. As Hashem lekech otiro. Yishol vim itiro. Does it mean yishol vim itiro? What to be? To be what? Frightened by a father and mother? There's no reason to be frightened by a mother. Tiro in the sense, actually, of what? Of reverence. It's a rational fear. It's a fear which expresses itself in a feeling of awe, reverence, It's usually, I mean, tied up with a sense of gratitude, I mean, and so forth on, I mean, loyalty. Or sometimes, for instance, when people tell me someone wants to kill you, and I take measures, safety measures, to protect myself from the one who conspires to kill me, then you don't say, Pahad, this is not Pahad, what is it, you? Is it you? Yura has sometimes the meaning, I mean, yura actually, yura and fear, has a double meaning. Meaning sometimes of awe, reverence. When I consider somebody above me and beyond my capacity, and I look up to him with admiration, I can say this fear as well. Awe. Yura, what do you call it? Yura Sarkovic. And sometimes it's not Yura Sarkovic, but Yura Sarkovic. I'm afraid of somebody, but I'm capable to rationalize my fear and to devise a plan by which I would be able to protect myself or to shield myself from him. Yeah. Pachad. Pachad means non-rational fear. Complete horror, terrified, terrorized, horrified, I mean, what are you having? No, never mind the... Take away for time now the matter of psychiatric terms. I like this to be kept at traditional basis. And the terms don't add anything. They absolutely don't add anything. They just desecrate the religious experience. Be careful. Rabbanim should be careful not to use, just a moment. Yeah. This is what you call it, it's dread, it's horror, I mean. When people act, and sometimes the man who is overcome, overpowered by pachat, Benny acts, not that I can only, acts in such a manner that actually the danger is increased and he exposes himself to his enemy instead of protecting himself. I don't have to give you examples, you know that very well. This part. But there is a loche there. With regard to HaKadosh, the question is like that. This is a loche question now. Yiras Hashem, let me just say. According to the Rambam, there are two experiences like the two sides of a coin. The Rambam is Havo and Yiro, like two sides of a coin. Havo, actually results in Yiro, and vice versa. Yiro leads to Havo. If you remember what the Rambam wrote in Perek Beis Mikras, he said that there are, first of all, admiration, ecstasy, man is overcome by the majesty of the universe, which is just a reflection of the majesty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and in his yearning, longing to come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to get as close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as possible, and at the same time, he realizes how can he appear before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaBriyo, Shpiro, HaFiro, and the Rezira begins to retreat. But this dialectic of Avo and Yiro, this HaMitzvah, is there HaMitzvah from Pachad HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is there HaMitzvah of Pachad HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Yeah, Pachad. And wherever we have to psuk him and tell him. Ashrei Odo Mefachei Tomid, there's another posuk. No. Fine. Yeah, this does not say it's a mitzvah, it says they will hide themselves. Yeah. But then is Vechatoyim, but there's another posuk. Pachad to Betzir Chatoyim. But the Gemara is Kashe. So Gemara answers, come me the Are, come me the Shmaya. What we've got to understand is Pachad a mitzvah or not? Is the mitzvah only Yire, or Pachad is also a mitzvah? Pachad a Shem. To be frightened to such an extent that man loses his common sense and his capacity to think, his rationality, and he becomes, he's completely perplexed and confused. Oh no. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here. Never should it interfere with the human dignity, human capacity to reason and to think. What do you say about it? This is a halacha question. Is there a mitzvah of Pachad Hashem or not? I don't know. This depends upon what the Pshat the Gemara's answer is. Gemara in Brochus. Kamei mila d'alma, kamei mila d'shmaya. The Gemara would appear that there is an element of Pachad. There is an element of Pachad. Just a moment! This is exactly what Shurin said. He said it. He said it. He said that the world will be overwhelmed by Pachad Hashem. Well, I'm not questioning whether there is. There's certainly Pachad Hashem. At a certain point in time, I mean, the world will be overcome by dread and horror, I mean, and the world will suddenly lose its what shall I say, sensibility and rationality. I mean, I'm asking that the mitzvah, that I don't know. I'll tell you frankly, I don't know. I've given a lot of thought to this problem. However, what do you want to say? Now about the Yerub HaFachat. Go ahead, this passage is good. Yerub HaFachat. Go ahead. Then the Rambam also says, Af Rosh HaShonah, the Rambam says, Yimei Yerub HaFachat. I don't know whether it is true of the whole year or it is confined to Rosh Hashanah. And Rosh Hashanah, there is certainly a mitzvah of Pachad. Pachad Yisrael, as we come to Pachad Yisrael. There is certainly a mitzvah of Pachad. Not Lechayt in Pachad. The Shefer is an expression not of Euro at the beginning. At the beginning, it's an expression of Pachad. A man caught by surprise. He's facing danger. And he actually was deprived of his sense of security. He has no confidence in himself, in confidence in his future. A man who doesn't know what we call in Hebrew evidates. He doesn't know what to do, how to respond to it. With Pachad is the response. It's not a clear logical one. It's an instinctual response. It's actual response which you may find among animals too. I mean, when animals should grazing in the steppes should feel that they are in danger. So they'll begin to run and to cling to each other. And that makes, and then that exposes them to the fiend, which is after them. You understand? I mean, this pachad, shefor, the mitzvah shefor, first of all is pachad, chil. Chil, just a moment. I talk as you hear v'om le'yecherod. This is chil pachad. That is chal chil amalkemed. That is chal chil amalkemed. It was so sudden. Pachad usually comes sudden. Yiro may develop for a period of time, because Yiro is a logical process of development, is subject to part of that. Because Yiro is rational, and actually depends upon maturing of judgment and understanding. I begin to realize that I have to be afraid. I mean, so, but Pachad strikes a man, strikes like a whirlwind, strikes a man suddenly. This what is Chalchal Amalgamed, she didn't understand it, what it is. I mean, and that Pachad expressed itself in physical mode, in muscular motion. It means troubling. Just a moment. And that is the Shefer. I don't need any rise now and any support. Allah let me go on now. When I need support, I'm not bashful. This exactly. Shefer, Rosh Hashanah is not just a Yimei Yiro, but a Yimei Pachad. Mepachad is it because man does not think the whole year about judgment? Because the idea of judgment is new to man, Rosh Hashanah. He doesn't think the whole year. He doesn't act the whole year. I mean, in a manner which should be reminiscent of judgment. He's not clear. He's self-assured, self-confident, and he forgets about judgment. Since he forgets about judgment, so judgment strikes him suddenly, like a hurricane. Without giving advance notice. Whatever strikes a person suddenly produces the emotion of pachad, of chil. That is chil. Just a moment, how it can be. All right, let's. How can be a mitzvah have as Hashem? All right, okay, Ebenezer's Kash of the Sahri. Okay. Interesting is, it is dread. I don't know, I mean, in dread there is also, I mean, I want to explain it to you, I mean, that's exactly it. In dread, there is also the element of hopelessness. Of hopelessness. Yes. You see, when you say dread or pachad, a pachad means when man experiences fear or yiro, man cannot be pretty certain about himself, and he can maintain a sense of dignity, and he's capable, of not only of thinking, but of resolving problems, and capable of having a sense of trust, of bitochin, of trust in faith. The man is frightened, suddenly frightened, struck by fiend. So man loses, actually, not only self-confidence, he loses, actually, he suddenly experiences a sense of nihility. As the whole existence becomes a very frightening affair, and a very nauseating, experience. Life is going to lose its sense, its worth, its value, and actually the motto is of course, the frightened person cannot think in logical terms, but instinctually, implicitly, in the fright, there is one question. So why was I created? I didn't enjoy. I'll tell you frankly, it is like a trapped animal, and all routes of escape are sealed off. I'll tell you where, let me be very specific about it. For instance, Mother Man. When does Mother Man experience pachad? It's interesting. For instance, medieval man used to be afraid at night. Darkness used to produce in him a sense of pachad in primitive man. You know that very well. Yeah. But the mother of man, darkness does not produce. What produces in mother of man the experience of power? You mean when a son, was... No. In mother of man, when he is Rahman Islam confronted with an incurable disease. Mother of man experiences pachad, the dread, they experience the awareness of heading straight into the grave. The experience of nihility while man is still existent. And when mother man is faced, not only faced, even when he thinks of it, take a case of malignancy, when he thinks of it, what does man feel? Let's analyze ourselves. What do you feel? Hopeless, not so much hopelessness as a sense of nausea, if I may use this term, which was used by Sartre, and actually complete and fright that it's completely worthless to exist. This is exactly. It's like a dark night. When one feels an extraordinary loneliness and despair, which is black, complete hopeless. You know who else experiences dread? You are still young, but I'm old. The elderly person. It is the dread which grows upon a man who is old. And it is somehow... It's a feeling that you're marching straight to the grave. There is no way out of escape. For instance, when an elderly person begins to think what will happen in 10 years, or in 9 years, or in 5 years, what will happen the next Rosh Hashanah, so he experiences a feeling of pachad, of dread. Because as Altenberg said very well once, in the famous Osterreiter, he says, he describes the beautiful thing about dread due to the awareness of death, which actually presses upon man. He describes a certain day in Vienna in January, as a matter of fact, the night of Sylvester describes, in Vienna, no one else could have said it any better. That's all. And that's exactly, of course, when I was young, I didn't understand it. But when I got older, I realized it. This is an excruciating experience. It's a life, and life now becomes very strange. Life becomes a very hideous affair, nauseating, at the same time, very attractive and fascinating, with which you cannot part. It's very strange. It's a very strange feeling. I don't know whether the theory has demanded, required of us, that we should actually experience this mood, this singular mood of hating life and loving it, because we are afraid to live it. Of finding life something nauseating and at the same time something beautiful, and not being ready to live. That feeling is basic in the Kedushas Hayim of Rosh Hashanah. I don't know about every day, I don't know. That I can tell you. I don't know. As a matter of fact, I was studying for that purpose. I was trying to examine the Likutei Torah. I don't believe the Likutei Torah speaks of Pachad. He mentions Pachad, but to consider Pachad as a mitzvah, as a part of our religious experience, an indispensable part, b'chol ha'shono, b'chol ha'shono, I doubt it very much. Am Rosh Hashanah, the Likutei Torah says it implicitly. According to Likutei Torah, that is Pachad, that is Shefor. Because the Likutei Torah speaks about Shefor, there are three explanations for Shefor, what does Shefor symbolize. It is according to the Gemara, the plain, the Yerushalmi, or even the Gemara, is the Shefor symbolizes the crying, or the moaning, or sighing of an adult person, a very successful person, who suddenly finds itself defeated. What do I mean? Aim Sisra. It is a mature person. A person, a very fortunate one. She enjoyed power and beauty and riches and luxury. Her son was Sisra, I mean, the head of Yovin. Was the prince, the duke, I mean, the governor. And suddenly, one afternoon, I mean, when she expected Sisra to come back from the field of battle as a victor, when his chariot be full of spoils, beautiful dresses, golden ornaments, and gems. So she suddenly, I mean, suddenly she realizes that a little is late in coming. And finally she realizes that he was defeated, and with him she was defeated. Sudden defeat. That's what Bichazal, this is Shefa. Sudden defeat. It's horror, it's pachad. You know, many people who are defeated suddenly, they don't expect a defeat. And they had, I mean, almost unlimited self-confidence, proud like Mother Man is. So you find themselves suddenly defeated, suddenly crushed. So then they experience, they commit suicide. This is pachad. Suicide is a result of pachad. And it's non-rational. Some people are afflicted with malignancy, they commit suicide. The whole story of what you call it, what is the technical term? Well, it's a legal problem now. What's the technical term? Euthanasia. Your problem euthanasia is a result of pachad. You kill him in order what? To save him for what? Not so much from the pain. Not so much from the pain. Matter of fact, now, I mean, with the anesthesia developed, I mean, it's possible to protect the man, I mean, from excruciating pain. Not always. It is simply, I mean, if euthanasia is justified, it is because men commit suicide because he's afraid of death. I mean, it's Schlecht zu mir Christian sehr sehr, I mean, it's a contradiction adjecto, I mean. But that's the result of pachad. Pachad is insanity. Well, he's a mishugo me marionero. It's insanity, it's irrational. Now it's irrational. It's absurd. It's insane. And that's Shiva. Then the Kutetera, I don't know why he changed it. The Kutetera speaks about Shiva being the howl of the animal. In the Gemara where you study, you see an Imo de Sisro, I want you to understand. Imo de Sisro in the Gemara is not just comes in just simply in order to give us the opportunity to understand the term Yevova, because it's the only place in Tanakh where the verb that Yabev is mentioned. And since Tarmunkeles interpreted through Yevova, so you have by comparative, so to say, by comparative semantics, you may detect what Yevova is, true or shvorim. That's the Bavli. Yerushalmi is more than that. Yerushalmi speaks that we have to blow 100 notes because Kiyimed is Sisro, like the mother of Sisro did. So it's not just a philological problem, but there is somehow philosophically a bond between the crying of Kiyimed is Sisro and the crying of the shofar. And since, according to tradition, Kiyimed is Sisro has cried 100 times, so then the shofar should blow 100 notes. Because the shofar symbolizes him with his Israel. The shofar symbolizes, I don't want even to mention his name, but he believed all the time, until the last day he believed that the German army is so mythical. He was already insane. He was insane all his life, but he believed that, I mean all the memoirs now report that he believes some mythical, legendary, imaginary army who will somehow emerge. Berlin was already isolated, under siege and all powers by the Russians. And military, not only military, everybody on the streets who understood me, there was no hope on me to reverse the tide. So he was speaking about a general with a mythical name, who is at the head, who marches at the head of an army, but who will reconquer Berlin and drive the Russians out of Germany, of his Germany. But it lasted until suddenly he realized, if you read the memoirs about the last hours of Hitler, he suddenly realized that there is no army. The story of Imre Sisro, by the Chal Nishkefo, that Yahweh him Sisro, half he and the Chachomeo try to support Peller. He's just late because he's very busy in finishing, the victorious battle. He'll come, but Imre Sisro suddenly realizes that it's just a myth. He won't come back. He's dead. He was defeated by Borok and Vera. And that's the Shefa. Sudden defeat of man. That the Kutetero speaks about the howl of the animal. It's again pachad, but from a different approach. The animal, does not know what he is, because the animal can eat, simply. There's no rational capacity. Cannot plan how to simply to escape. But the animal's response is instinctual, mechanical. When disaster strikes, and the predatory animal is about to attack. So what do the animals do? What do they do? If they feel the smell, they don't know, there's no knowledge. They smell danger, instinctually. So what do they do? So they begin to cling to each other. Instead of dispersing and hiding, they, on the contrary, run to the center of the pasture and the foreign group, which is easy. Very easy for the fiend to destroy. You act just contrary, to your own basic interests. This is Pachad. This is the howl of the animal. This is Shefa. It means, according to the Kutetere, please, they are the most beautiful Russians in Kutetere for Ashana and Kippur, but you have to understand them well. Well, Kutetere is not a sermon manual, you understand? You have got to understand it well. But beautiful Russians. It means dignified man lost. To appear on Rosh Hashanah before HaKadosh Baruch Hu as man, as rational man, dignified, upon whom God has placed the crown, the divine crown, his own, I mean, and somehow one created him to befriend, him, he lost his complete failure. Massim Einbach, complete failure. He must appear before Akadosh Baruch Hu, as I told you. Not like his dignified men. The first approach, I'm sure, it's not the last approach, according to the Kodesh Torah, but the first approach is like a brute, like the beast in the field. Beast in the field doesn't know a fear or anything. He knows just a part. It's the first instinctual howl of men who suddenly realizes on Rosh Hashanah morning, that his existence is threatened. You should have thought of it, I mean, the whole year round. This, his existence is not solid. There is no security in this world. That all the talk about security, by increasing one's bank account is ridiculous. There is no security. Man, if you want to ask me what is man, there's always a threatened being, permanently threatened. The animal is not threatened permanently, because the animal cannot anticipate. The animal doesn't know it will die. The animal cannot anticipate a minute before disaster strikes that catastrophe will destroy it. God! So the animal is a happy being, basically. Only when the animal begins to feel, I mean to smell danger, then it becomes completely overwhelmed, overpowered, and responds instinctually with the howl. But man is a threatened being. There's no security. He anticipates time, suppose, future events. So Rosh Hashanah, man appears, he's frightened. Whether the fright is due, in my opinion, the video of Yerushalmi and the Babli explained, that man, great man, victorious man, who was defeated suddenly, unexpectedly, surprisingly, because he's not oriented anymore. I be defeated. And the Shefer is the outcry of female Sisra, that proud, arrogant woman. Or the Shefer is the howl of the animal, who has no, is deprived of capacity to think. Simply, I mean, is struck by disaster. It doesn't matter much. According to, I have a different interpretation of Shefer. It is the voice of the child. Because actually, when you take Shvorim, it's basically the crying not of an adult, it's the crying of a child, of a baby, infant. Shami cannot catch him, a child, it's hard to catch the breath, but she cannot cry in long notes, so to say, very short notes. How does a child cry, a baby? Oh, yeah. I have forgotten already, but you should remember. What is it? Sistrua. Again the child. A child, you cannot speak of a baby, of an infant, or even a child of hero. A child doesn't know what hero is. Because a child in that regard is like an animal, cannot anticipate events. There is no future to the child, he does not experience future, the dimension of future, or dimension of past. It's only the present. But when the child is struck, for instance, the child should touch the flame, right? Like the flame of a candle, or touch a hot plate, begin to cry. It's complete despair, it's hopeless. Take away a toy from a child. So it is, you see black despair. It's example. But whatever, if it is the shape of possible, is the crying of the proud man who lost the battle suddenly. And suddenly he was told he is defeated, bankrupt, failure, this image is Israel, or the way the Likud Torah interprets, it is the howl of the animal, he is suddenly surrounded, with all avenues of escape sealed off, and he has to face its fiend, arch enemy. The animal instinctually feels that it means death and nihility. Or it is the crying of the the child, the outcry of the baby, doesn't matter. Schaefer represents the emotion of pachad nadir at the very beginning, at the very outset. And that is, let us take a look at the pachad. All right, okay, just a minute. Lunch at 1 o'clock. Now we follow. Are you hungry? In spite of the pachad Rosh Hashanah, you are still hungry. Yes. Who is in the back? Who is in the back there? Who is the chef down there? Who is Moshe here? If the one in the back is hungry, let him go out and eat it. I don't know in the back. I don't see anybody. Anyway, now you see, that is Chiyuv. That is the Piety of Chiyuv. This is the Piety of Chiyuv. Please, listen, you open your mouth there.
Which Piety?
Piety, beginning of Shachis and Musaf. No, Shachis and Musaf. You're racing with safety. Chil, not only the content of the poet describes, I mean, just dread and horror. A man who is lost has no way. I mean, there is no way, I don't know any way how to extricate himself from his involvement and entanglement. So, chil. And then he begins to speak right the next poet, as chil yein kudo. The terrible day of judgment. The day is terrible. Not even fearsome, but more than terrible. Awesome and terrible. As chil yein pkudo, be'emov, kolechum li'shogdo, in all creation, kolechum, I mean, every man, every individual, is be'emov, finds itself in the clutches of the dread produced by the day. Everybody is a captive of dread and pachad of the day. Behem of Kol Chum L'Shokdo, Goshim Bera. Then, just one. Then let us take Musaf. Let's take Musaf. I mean, I could the Musaf. Kein Amun of Barok Chodin, I mean, right away. אם אתם מעצים לגדים, אם אתם מעצים לגדים, ואם אמן יעס, יש מנחה ענף חס, אם לבד כבל עם צימאס, קודש, לא תתק ספרס, קומפליט הופלסנס. We cannot win the case, so to say. We will be, I mean, found guilty and wanted. I mean, that's all. Of course, as I told you, the experience of dread culminates where? In the Sanhedrin. And I told you, the Sanhedrin was not written by Kabir. What is the Sanhedrin? What does the Sanhedrin portray? Not only men, but even angels. They are the whole body. Not only men. They are the Tachtenim. They are the Tachtenim. They are the Tachtenim. Yechizu means they will be captives. They will be captured. Or a power of the Chilorot. Kleyisku v'necho badi. This exactly ends in that ending. Reaches its climax, its apex in the Sanhedrin. There is a slow build-up, if you study the poet carefully, there is a slow build-up of the experience of Pachad. The apex is in Sanhedrin. And of course, immediately after the Sanhedrin, we discontinue, enough, we say Kedusha. And a new phase begins. Now let us see here. And now, you see, Upat Ayin, Upat Meos, the Shevet Ayin, why is there fear? Why is there, we say, horror, pachat? Because the Imadin. And the Imadin I see, Upat Meos, you see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can say, all right, there's the Imadin. But it's not inevitable, perhaps there will, no judgment will take place. I mean, I can persuade myself, you see, man, I mean, as a habit and order, I mean, in order, I mean, to somehow to assure himself, to engage in mystical thinking, in thinking which is unreal. So he said, "Upad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is dressed up." You see, you can. If well, just uchan hayeim, so I can say it's not uchan. Who says it's Suchan? But Upat, it's visible. It's self-evident. He's dressed up. If he's dressed up, two things are. Two conclusions you have to draw. First, what? Ready. If I'll say America is ready for war, so it doesn't mean that the war will take place. If you say this day is selected for Mishpat, yes, selected, America is ready for war with Russia and with China. I don't know how long I hope she is, I don't know. So doesn't mean that the war is inevitable. But when I say America has mobilized the army, the soldiers are in battle dress, so what does it mean? War is unavoidable. Who but knows? Means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is already wrapped in the judge's gown. He's already on his... he's sitting on the throne of judgment. It means judgment will take place. It is inevitable, unavoidable. No matter what you do, you have to face him. But this is exactly the awareness of judgment should produce in man a state of panic. Basically, pachad is panic. Man should become panicky. And that's the Shefa. Whatever voice speaks to the Shefa. Interestingly, somewhere. Take Hayim and Train Maase Kol Yayim, Gisha Sikumim Pnei Oyayim, Dinam Benefales Lefidim. If you take the last three letters, Yom, the last syllable, Yom, Oyayim, and Fidayim, you'll see something very strange. Excuse me. Joseph. Yes. Go ahead. There is what I call tension, dialectical tension, between Hayim and Kolayim, and Oyeim and Fidyeim. There is some contradiction, there is some conflict in the semantics between Hayeim and Kolayim, and Oyeim and Dinam Benefales Lefidyeim. Do you understand what I want to say? I wouldn't say reverses. It means like that. Reshefet Hayeim, Chein Maase Kolayim. There was no need for him to say pre maase kol yayim. He could have said pre maase kol or kola maase. It's not only the question of the metric arrangement which induced the kalir, to use yayim. You see, there is irony. There is irony in that. There is conflict. Dialectical conflict between Yayim and Kol Yayim. The folly men manifest, man's mistake, expresses itself in his failure to understand that any day could become Hayim. What is Hayim means? This day, this chosen day, this singular day, this particular day. Koye means an ordinary day. Koye means every day. Routine. It means, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu judge? What does he judge? What is man afraid of? What actually inspires fear in me? That I spend, that I spent my life. What shall I say? Following the routine of Koye. I never understood that each yom is important, and each yom can be converted into the day of judgment. The kol yom, the awareness of kol yom, it's an ordinary Monday, it's everydayness, an ordinary Monday, an ordinary Tuesday. There's no need, for meaningful action. There's no there's no need for preparedness or for planning or my deeds. Oh, for Wofore, actually I mean yearning for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to try to come as close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as possible. Simply these unplanned, tiresome, repetitious prayers is the source of sin. Kol Yehim. If man, you see, Yahadus has had a tremendous awareness of time. Basically, man's main offense is waste of time. But man does not appreciate time. Man does not appreciate time in his youth, he does not appreciate time later. Of course, when he gets older, he begins to realize that time is the most precious possession man has, in particular, and each day may become Zehayim. Each day can be an important date in my life. If I am not guided by the mentality of Kol Yehim. Upat Mios Leshefet Hayim, Chayim, to scrutinize, to examine, Masse, which was somehow, what shall I say, who was determined by the awareness of Kol Yehim. It's not important, it's insignificant. It's a matter of routine. I don't have a means to plan it. Chaymaisi Kol Yehim. Of course, Yehim could have been turned, Kol Yehim could have been turned in Zayin. Then man would have saved it, would have been protected under their judgment. This, as a matter of fact, Chazal said beautifully, Odom Nidin Bechol Yehim. So all the Shenim already raised the question, if Odom Nidin Bechol Yehim, so what is the function of Hashanah? All right, the Shenim had a lot of trouble in this minor. When the Bala Musa, Salanta speaks about it, everybody, from Brazil, all the Bala Musa. In my opinion is what Chazal said, Odom Nidin Bechol Yehim, but he doesn't know of that. If Odom Nidin Bechol Yehim, so Odom should live, should arrange his life on a plain Monday in Shvat, the way he arranges his life on Rosh Hashanah. After all, man is different on Rosh Hashanah than a plain, ordinary day. Odom Nidin Bechol Yehim, he is not cognizant of that. He is not cognizant of that. He is not aware of it. Rosh Hashanah, the only difference is between Kol Yehim and Yehim, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, all right, I mean. But one day you have to be aware. If men had been aware, were aware of every day of judgment, that every deed, every word, every action of his counts, there would be no need for judgment, there would be no need for Pachat to experience Pachat in the day of judgment. The mentality of Kol Yehim, routine, unplanned, tiresome, repetitiousness, right? The monotony, the Kol Yehim, that is the source of the fright of Kol Yehim. Now, Gishas Yekumim Pnei Oyehim, take a look here. Dinom Bele Falis Lefid Yehim. What does it mean? Gishas Yekumim Pnei Oyehim? The Yekumim is creatures approach or appear before the Oyehim, Dinom Bele Falis Lefid Yehim. Interesting is that there is contradiction between these two words. Here is the very distinct. Oyim and Fidyim, it's just the opposite. Semantically, Oyim and Fidyim, I mean, represent two different ideas. I mean, what is Oyim means? Not fear. The dreadful, the awesome, the fearsome, I mean, exactly, I mean, yeah. Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu fearsome, awesome, dreadful? Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu like that? Why? Because we know that we will be found guilty. The verdict is already, we can foresee the verdict a priori. I mean, there's no need, I mean, to engage in guessing. The verdict is clear cut. It's a guilty verdict. Who said so? Who said so it's a guilty verdict? Tanakh. This one already inspired. But we're going to go back to the Tanakh. Well, it. Where is it? In Nia, I believe. Didn't Eliphaz say that Arenish Melakai Yitzdok can learn to win a case when he is being judged by the Almighty, or by Malocho Yosim Teholo. Not even his angels can win the case, can be found just, I mean, can be, will be acquitted. Huh? Yeah.
No, you're not stopped. You're aware of
that.
You don't have the
goods
to.
Just a minute. This is awareness on Rosh Hashanah. I want you to understand. The awareness of Rosh Hashanah is chayev. There's no problem of zakay or chayev. There cannot be. Cannot be any problem of zakay or chayev. And that is, he is guilty. And we say it in the Matzah Imekadin, me yitzak lefanechavadin. If you should press the justice to the press to the bottom of justice, who can be justified before the is Oyim? So what does Oyim express? Complete admission of guilt and the fire and the awareness of being simply damned, condemned and damned. Oh, nothing can help. No salvation, no consolation, nothing. I betrayed the Almighty, I enish Melekai Yitzdok. Can man be found justified, just in the presence of God? He's out! Oyim! What's always the refrain in Tayet when you say Oyim? Oyim v'neiro! That's why Rosh Hashanah, we repeat, I mean, the attribute of Neiro. Neiro means awesome, fearsome. It means in his presence, I cannot exist in his presence. If I come too close to him, when Malchus means, I mean, the infinite distance between God and man, it disappears, and suddenly man is confronted by God. He stands just face to face with Rabbi Eshlam, like the accused person faces the judge, faces the judge on the bench. As I know very well what the verdict is. The verdict is guilty, and this is awareness of complete guilt on Rosh Hashanah. It's nothing in Kippur. Complete guilt of Rosh Hashanah. Nothing. There are no extenuating circumstances, no mitigating factors. There is nothing, no defense, no apology. There is nothing. Ha'enesh melekai yitzhak. Umalochim yichafein. That's what Rabbanu, this legendary Rabbanu said. Umalochim yichafeizu. Umchilu rodo yichafeizu. Even the angels cannot sustain a man themselves in front of a Kaddish Baruch. Is what does Oyim mean? To approach God with one thought in mind, to be not defeated, to be condemned, destroyed, annihilated. All right? But the Kalil is not happy with that. This is Pachat. Why is there Pachat? Because it's Pnei Oyim. But the very moment you say Oyim, Pachat, Yadus has never concluded with Pachat. The conclusion is always hope. He says, Radwig, Dinom Belefales, Lefidim. Here is, I mean, just reverse of Oyim. If I expect redemption, so there is no Oyim. The Oyim and Fidim are two attributes, not attributes, two nouns, which are mutually exclusive. Oyim and Fidim. So what is it? So it means, Logeshes Pnei Oyim, and then also Lefalis Beili Fidim. What does pidyon mean here? What does pidyon mean here? I want you to know, the pidyon sometimes in the Torah appears with a nun, and sometimes with a mem. Of course, he chose the form of mem, because it matches the oyim, of course, yes. In order, I mean, to have the identity of the sound, yes. But what does pidyon mean? Ah? Ah? guilty, be redeemed. Be redeemed. Or rather be ransomed. I would rather suggest the word ransom than redeemed. Pidyon in the sense of kefir. Pidyon in the sense of kefir. His Rosh Hashanah man does not win his case. Man never emerges on the victorious on Rosh Hashanah. Man is defeated on Rosh Hashanah completely. Completely. He is only ransomed later. He is found chayev, the great found chayev and ransomed. Redeemed. He buys himself out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rosh Hashanah takes, accepts ransom. Does God accept ransom or not? What is it? It's also a problem. Is there the institution of ransom he others, or there is no institution of ransom he others? What do you say, Judge? My friend. Huh? What? Father is redeeming the sense of gula. No. That's a problem. It's a problem in our... this is the problem. This is the Yahadus problem. As I told you before, is pachad a mitzvah or isn't? Again, does HaKadosh Baruch Hu accept ransom or doesn't? Your ransom is disdainfully rejected. Let us just read. All right. I believe there are passages which prima facie appear to be mutually contradictory. It's like Shneksum Makrishim Zeh. Tell me what you say. Lepoda Yivdeish. Lein Yitein Malekim Kofre. No man can by any means redeem himself or his brother. No give to God a ransom for himself. No ransom. So how does Khalil speak about ransom? It's against Tirim? Against Tirim? What ransom? Then there's another pasuk. Another pasuk in Yiv, Lamed Ches Yifches. Ve'raf kefer al yatecha. That you are rich. And you have a lot of ransom, you can pay a lot of ransom, should not mislead you. God will reject the ransom which you offer to him, no matter how great this ransom will be rejected. Any attempt is rejected. So you have psukim that there is no ransom, the institution of ransom is non-existent in Yahadus. A man cannot ransom himself. Who once found guilty, so he is condemned. No ransom. Yet we find verses in which the institution of ransom appears to be a legitimate one. Also in Yev, in Yeshal of Malach Melitz Echad Min Aleph, when do you say, we don't do that? Kaporas, because Kaporas is the concept of ransom. What does ransom mean? What does ransom mean? In plain English, what does ransom mean? Substitution. Zet tachaze. Zet tachaze. Substitution. No? Of course, when we say that in the other Nishvesh Salmoves, before performing the minhag of Kaporas, it would be ridiculous to quote psukim which reject ransom. So you quote the psu, the pasuk which accepts ransom. Im yeshol of malach meli tzechad min olet, vayichaneneu vayim abdeeu mered eshachas matzose kefer. There be for him an angel, an intercessor, one among a thousand, to vouch for man's uprightness. Then he is gracious unto him and says, deliver him from going to shachas. Repeat, I have found ransom. I accept the ransom. No. So what does it mean? Is there ransom or there is no ransom? Shnei ksuvim makhishim zeh zeh. But is the far me to wait? The far is me to. Yeah, is a ransom. There is the institution of ransom. Is there ransom or there is no ransom? Just a comment. It depends what kind of bribe you give. Yeah, it depends on the kind of the ransom. Some ransom is disdainfully rejected, some is accepted. The question is there ransom or there is no ransom again? Huh? No ransom, all right, of course. Okay. Yeah, all right, okay, okay. But Rosh Hashanah is a day of ransom. That's what a Reza Kalil says. What kind of Kedushas I am? The Sayyim is first Pachad, self-condemnation, self-abnegation, complete, absolute guilt, without, so to say, taking refuge in any extenuating or mitigating factors. It's complete annihilation of man, complete loss of security, existential security. His road will lead him straight to the grave, and that's all, nothing else. Nothing else to the grave. On the other hand, it's the day of ransom. Not in Kippur. In Kippur there's no ransom. Of ransom, of substitution. The day of ransom. Why is Rosh Hashanah the day of ransom? Correct. Why is the Akedah the ransom? But why is the Akedah the Parsha correct? The Akedah Rosh Hashanah is Chazalev, placed the Akedah in the center of the Kedushas Hayim. Why is the Akedah so unavoidable and inevitable? I mean, as far as the Kedushas Hayim is concerned, it's inseparable from the Kedushas Hayim. What is the story of the Akedah? A story of substitution, of ransom. Vayikach Avrom Mesrayu, Vayaleu le'elo tachas bnei. That is pity. The story of the Akedah. Because Rosh Hashanah without the idea of ransom would completely be a day of horror. A day of complete negation of man. The Hadus was not ready to accept it. It's the institution of ransom. What was the ransom during the Akedah? Do you think actually the Ayel was the ransom which Abraham gave? Do you think that the Ayel was the ransom which HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so interested to accept it? Yeah, no, I don't believe it. So yes, who is there? I don't know. What do you want to say? So what was the ransom? Correct, right? The ransom was that Akedah, actually, I always say, the Akedah is not was just an Israeli test. It took place. It was a reality. It was a reality. What it mean? It's the loss of Yitzchak. What the Kodesh Baruch Hu want? What the Kodesh Baruch Hu want? That Abraham should lose Yitzchak. Did he lose him or not? I always am in court, I mean, unfortunately, Rahman al-Islam, in a case, for instance, take a case of incurable disease, malignancy, when the family is told about the fact, the doctors, and doctors, you know, the way they tell, they can be very cruel in the way they communicate that, this type of news to the family. I know it from my own Rahman al-Islam, my own experience, can be very cruel and ruthless. Completely as if they were outside of the danger and the possibility. They were superhuman, whom that kind of disease could never strike. This is something, I wouldn't say all doctors, but most of them. So what happens? What happens? The first person is lost in life. Lost in life. Death sometimes is a delivery. A delivery from distress. I know many cases. Because you see a person whom you love, whose life means so much to you, whose company you cherish. Are you ready to sacrifice to give your life? The person doesn't know anything. And you walk around him, you have to smile to him, and tell him lies, a pack of lies, what the doctor said. And you know the person all. He's just a guest for a while. You experience that excruciating, horrible experience of losing, not losing somebody, but losing part of yourself. Because if you bury a person whom you liked and you loved, you bury part of yourself in the person, in the grave. Right. losing, that is the death light of me is very little life. If we are realists, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Abraham, Kach es Bilcho, es Yechitcho, Asher Ahaveto, es Yitzcho, Velech Lecho al Eretz HaMirio, Ve'aleihu Shom Le'elo, Alach HaDeorim, Asher Eimer Olecho, and Vayashkim Avram Babaker, and he wandered with Yitzchok, traveled in the company of his two lads for 3 days, and when did he lose him? Was there a need for the knife? He lost him when he reached for the knife, literally, or he lost him the very moment the communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu came through and told him, Abraham, Yitzchak is not yours. I want you to lose Yitzchak, to abandon him, to give him up. He's not yours anymore, he belongs to me, and I'll take him away. You know, to Avraham, and it was a sealed verdict. Sealed verdict. No one could have changed. No possibility of disobedience. Has we shown him a part of Abraham? That means Yitzchak was gone. So he lost him, Yitzchak. Yitzchak was gone. There, Yaakov Avraham is Yitzchak, may all God is Beach, and Yishlach is Yodrik Asamacheles, Lishchet is May, the Iker of Mar Hashem Yishamayim, Avraham, Avraham. I'll keep in your Cholanam, I'll cast Lay Mehumo. And I, when and apparently he came over to the Mizbeach, he untied Yitzchak and lifted him from the Mizbeach, placed him back on the ground. It was a new sound he got. A new sound. It was a new gift. Yitzchak was another Yitzchak was born. The old Yitzchak was buried in God. So what is the substitution here? What is the substitution here? Substitution means korban does not mean physical destruction. Actually, it should have meant physical destruction. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu lays claim to everything he meant. I mean, that's what modern man doesn't understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not lay claim just a part of man. To one aspect of man. He lays claim to everything in man. Body, soul, all his talents, all his interests, the people whom he loves and the people to whom he is committed, I mean, to his household, to his wife and to his children, to the babies and to the adults. HaKadosh Baruch Hu lays claim to everything. And the thing is total, not limited. Total claim. You belong to me and anytime I want, I can simply take away whatever I'll choose. So actually physical destruction is also part. Could have been claimed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he accepted substitution. Namely, what kind of substitution did he accept? The loss of Yitzchak, the spiritual loss of Yitzchak, instead of the physical loss of Yitzchak. That is that kind of ransom HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes. That kind of bride may go for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Basically, not the ayil was Tachas Yitzchak. The ayil just symbolized substitution. For the substitution is simply the act of losing Yitzchak and the part of Abraham before Yitzchak was destroyed, before Yitzchak was killed. This is ransom. This kind of ransom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu accept. Now I'll let you go just on to have your lunch and then we'll finish after lunch. There's another aspect I have to develop. But I do it after the lunch. I mean, if you eat quickly, we'll do it, we'll make it. I want to send you home.
Sure.
What? I would like to call your attention to something else in the Piyut. It is very characteristic. He should have said, Upat miozli mishpat hayim. He uses the funny word, l'shefet hayim. It's not funny. The word shefet appears in Tanakh only in plural, not in singular. Well, shvatim. Shvatim. Of course, in Tanakh, does not, the word shefet does not appear in Tanakh at all. Shvatim, yeah. Apparently, shefet is the singular of shvatim. In mishpat, you know, there's a difference between mishpatim and shvatim. What's the difference? Correct. Shvatim is not just justice, it's applied justice. Applied justice if the man is found guilty. It means shvatim means punishment. Mishvatim gdolim, great punishment. They say great justice. It isn't correct. It is the implementation of justice, or justice applied if man is found guilty. Penalties, justice applied, is not penalty is English, but it is actually the implementation of justice in the negative sense, more or less. Zupat mioz, the day is ready, or let's say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready, not lishpoit, leshefet, to punish. It means the guilt is taken for granted. The guilt is taken for granted. Is upat ayneos lishfotim hayem. As if he had said, instead of shefet, upad meos lishfotim hayem. The day was ordained, but that doesn't matter now. I'm not trying now to analyze the world, but since day of creation, since creation, lishfotim, on which men be punished. Because the assumption of Rosh Hashanah, the first assumption of Kedushas Hayim is man is guilty, man has got to be punished. Kuli chayev. This is the first assumption. L'shefet hayim. Yeah. What happens, I told you. And this is the source, this awareness of shefet instead of mishpat. The mishpat is a foregone conclusion, I mean. The whole debate, the arguments, I mean, the whole trial is completely superfluous. Is guilty from the very beginning, a priori guilty. Man is always guilty in the presence of the Almighty, and that doctrine was described in what? In Eov, by Eliphaz. By Eliphaz, I mean. Behold, he putteth no trust in his servants, in his angels he charges with folly. So. Any sheikh in Batechemer is certainly guilty. It means there is no problem with it. So the awareness of Rosh Hashanah is awareness of guilt. Not just guilt, which there is no, what shall I say, there's no atonement for it. No atonement for it. It's guilty, found guilty, and condemned. That's it says, Upat mios leishetet again. Vishvotim shepet ijoda vishvotim again. What, not always, mishpot means if the decision, the verdict is in doubt, and depends upon the evidence, and no one is sure a priori what the outcome will be, it is mishpot. The possibility of acquittal exists in mishpot. When you say, Yuchanayim, the shepherd, is there is no possibility, I mean, of men winning the case. It means men will be found guilty and acquitted. This exactly, I'll be frank with you. Mother man is not used to such thinking. Mother man is an opinion, I mean, he's always, he should always be the winner, the victor. He's always right, I mean. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is wrong. He's full of complaints against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and complaints and charges against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu somehow owes him a debt. Particularly, it is quite, that approach is quite, you see, widespread among Orthodox Jews, American Orthodox Jews. Let something happen in their family. Sickness, disease. So right away, I mean, was filled up with Baruch Hu from me. Is it care of the scholar? Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, rabbis, you know that. And this is exactly the wrong awareness. The Rosh Hashanah is the awareness of men being guilty. No matter how great it is,
How great is a man being guilty, not only we, Sheikh Nebotachemia, we little people, small people. The greatest of men, Meshach Rabbeinu, Avraham Avinu, man is guilty in the eyes of God. Yeah. Yes, we know about it. In the Maloch of Yosem Tov, in the Avod of Yosem Tov. That's the Rosh Hashanah. What? That is responsible, that is actually the factor which precipitates the experience of Pahat. Dread, I mean, as we have described it. Now, what Rav Lozer HaKalil, this is Pnioyim, Oyim V'Niro, so Melech Oyim V'Niro. As a matter of fact, the psalm which we selected to be recited prior to Tkei Shefer, Melech Gotel V'Niro. Always. Melech Gotel V'Niro. In the psalm. The word Niro is the, what shall I say, is the Shibboleth of Rosh Hashanah. Correct. It's called Yom Noah. You're right. You're right. 100% right. This is why it's called Yom Noah. Not so much days of war, but days of dread. Kodesh V'Neiro. All right. In Sefer Tehillim, Tzohar Sefer Tehillim, is a Rosh Hashanah in Kippur say Kodesh V'Neiro. Because on an ordinary holiday, it's Kodesh V'Neiro. On the contrary, there's Yiras Hashem, not Pachat. Rosh Hashanah is Pachat. Because as a matter of fact, in Isaiah, when Isaiah in the second paragraph, when Isaiah describes, I mean, the future day of judgment, when God will sit in judgment, not all over men, but over the universe as such, over the hills and the mountains, over the cities and the towns, and men in the world, he there described the Pachat, Yimadim. They'll all flee, they'll flee from God. They'll go into hiding. In order to avoid God's punishment. But you have to understand that this process, I mean, this experience of pachad, awareness of self-condemnation and pachad, is what shall I say, is the prologue to the Kedushas HaYom of Rosh Hashanah. This is the introduction. Alright. Then we have spoken already, but he says, Oyim is followed or accompanied by pidyon. Ransom. God takes ransom. Man is guilty, but man can buy himself out. Can buy himself out. From, what shall I say, from the wrath of God, from the captivity, or from the stress in which he finds himself, from the guilt. He pays ransom. And we said that some kind of ransom is a legitimate Jewish institution, which is acceptable. And God takes ransom. And we have said, what is the typical ransom, the symbolic ransom? Which took place, but somehow, I mean, in the spiritual dimension, it took place. That Kekede is a reality. Only physically, Yitzhak survived. All right, please say. But, so Rosh Hashanah is not only the day of guilt, complete guilt, condemnation of man, Rosh Hashanah is also the day of ransoming man. No, what's the problem now and next? We are not yet close to Shire. Ransoming is a knapper Greek. Not how much you have to pay. It's not a question how much you have to pay. Dignity of man would what? Would insist that men be found what? Innocent. I mean, this is an impossibility. But the day of ransom, all right? So now the question is what? And Schaefer, basically the first sound of Schaefer is the Schaefer of the Isle. This is ransom. It means you are found guilty. This is the first blast of the Schaefer, whatever it is, a tree or a tree, I don't care, it might be a tree. You are found guilty, but you still have a chance, the last chance, to get to be pardoned by paying. By giving substitution. All right? Very nice. No? Ah? Yes, fine. But the question is, who ransoms us? Who ransoms us? If there is surrender, I mean. If there is surrender. Yeah. Who ransoms us? Who pays the ransom? Just. As a matter of fact, this is the problem which troubled the mind of Kalir. Kalir tells us now a story. Orishain Odom Beinetzer. I want you to know, there's a machlekes in the Gemara, for the Baruch Hashanah B'tishrei Nivrei Elam, it's Rabbanis Nivrei Elam, all Mesadrei HaTfilin, all liturgies, all Mesadrei HaTfilin, have accepted the opinion as B'tishrei Nivrei Elam. The Gemara, they already discussed it. And the best proof for it is, Ze Ayim, Trilas Masecho, Ze Koren Le Yemilom, Ayim Araselam Mishkot Zohar. Is Rosh Hashanah the day of creation of man? Let's have it. Not creation of the world. The world was created, started, the creation started B'chofei B'Ve'elam. The completion of creation was on Rosh Hashanah. On Friday. The Rosh Hashanah of the first Rosh Hashanah was on the Friday. Friday. Creation of man. Now in our calendar, there is no Rosh Hashanah for Friday. The first day cannot fall on Friday. But Orishin Odom Beinetzer. Is that Gdushayim of Rosh Hashanah reflects also man's creation? Alright. Vitzuva Cheik Velenotzer. Rosh Hashanah is also the day of sin, first sin. Because according to Chazal, in many Midrashim, Odom was created on Friday, he was told, and he was placed in Gan Eden, was told not to eat and made the dust.